Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated staff writer Rohan Nadkarni. Rohan is live from an undisclosed hotel room in Phoenix, Arizona, breaking hearts, living the dream. Rohan, how is life in the desert?
I mean, everything was pretty good until the turmoil my life was sent into because of the troubled production of Fast 10. So that's been, you know, just dealing with the emotional fallout from that versus also trying to do a good job, deliver stories to readers has been difficult. I actually have a shout out to give, Mike. I was at Phoenix Suns shoot around this morning. Today's Monday. And the lovely woman working at the front desk who checked me in told me she subscribes to Sports Illustrated. Shout out to her. Yeah, man. You know, she's the reason you and I are able to do this. So very thrilling.
Is she also an Open Floor listener, or you didn't get that deep in the weeds with her?
She didn't strike me as somebody who's listening to a lot of podcasts. But
that's okay.
Yeah. No, she's subscribing to the magazine. You know, it's been a long time subscriber as well. So shout out to her.
Wow, we're having an earnest start to today's episode. I love it. That's glorious. Wonderful. On today's show, Rohan, we will be opening up the mailbag and breaking down Sunday's pair of game ones between the Celtics, Bucks, Warriors, and Grizzlies. But first, a quick reminder to all of our wonderful listeners to please keep the emails coming. Openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. All right, Rohan. So before we dive into yesterday's action and open up the emails, I feel like we should quickly address the biggest injury of these playoffs so far. I'm obviously talking about Marcus Smart's quad. He's questionable. No, I'm just kidding. We're obviously talking about Joel Embiid's orbital fracture and concussion, which will keep him out of at least the first two games of Philly's round two series against the Heat. We didn't get to address this on our last episode because it happened that night, I believe, I want to say, or news. He broke his face already, but we didn't know about it until after we posted that episode. So even though game one is tonight, this is a short turnaround, but I feel like we should talk about it for a quick second. So just what is your, like, is this series over? I should say that Joel is expected to come back by either game three or game four. It might be too late by that point, but just what is your sense here on how this injury impacts the series?
I mean, first and foremost, Embiid's just had awful injury luck during the playoffs, man. It's terrible. I mean, he was sick during that Toronto series in 2019. Last year, I think people have honestly already forgotten. Was he playing with a torn meniscus? I mean, he was playing with a knee injury for much of the playoffs last year.
He was.
Yeah, he had an orbital fracture that caused him to miss the first two games. Last time Philly played Miami in the playoffs, in his first playoffs, I believe that was 2017, was that? 18 now? Oh, man, all the Philly years of – that was 18. All the Philly years have blended together. But, yeah, man, he's had awful injury luck, and it's just as unfortunate because it's not even like, you know, earlier in his career there were these concerns. Is this guy going to be in good shape? Is he going to take care of his body? I think he's done all those things. I think he's made all those leaps as a superstar. He's an MVP finalist for a reason. Just tough. To me, I don't want to talk about this game too much because I think by the time a lot of people listen to this podcast, it'll have happened already. But I'm not ruling Philly out of this series. I'm not ruling them out of any of these games in Miami. The Heat have their own injury issues. We don't know if Jimmy Butler's at 100%. Kyle Lowry's going to be missing at least game one. I'm really interested to see if Philly goes small, if they're willing to just kind of really play risky, get funky. To me, if I'm Doc Rivers, you're playing with a little bit of house money here in game one. Try something weird. See if you can catch the Heat off guard. Play Matisse Thybulle at center. Play George Niang at center. Maybe try some weird stuff when Bam's not on the floor. See what you can do to kind of junk up the game or take the Heat out of what they plan to do a little bit. And this is a moment for James Harden. I think he looked really good game six of that Raptors game. I don't think he's going to be uncomfortable with the responsibility they're asking him to carry. Can he execute? It's going to be difficult, but I think Philly's still got a chance in this series. I really do.
I think they have a chance for sure. I'm still picking the Heat. And I picked them with a healthy Joel Embiid. We should say, I mean, he had the torn thumb also, yeah, we should mention again. So he's got a whole bunch of stuff that he's dealing with. But to your point, it is tricky to game plan, watch film, figure out what the Sixers are going to throw at them. They have not played James Harden this season in a Sixers uniform, excuse me. And Doc Rivers said that, you know, they were going to lean into James Harden's offense. So that means spacing the floor. Maybe, you know, Paul Millsap could get a look at the five. Tyrese Maxey's probably going to have to play 40 plus minutes. And honestly, Max, I wonder who's going to guard Maxey with Kyle Lowry out. We should talk about that for a quick second, too. That's not an insignificant injury. I've been down on the Sixers supporting cast for basically since the trade deadline. They do have some capable outside shooters, though. And James Harden has been diming guys up this entire
season. I mean, Tobias Harris, I thought, was really good in that Raptors series. Maxey obviously had the breakout game, but, you know, their supporting players, I think, had moments in that series.
Yeah, so Danny Green's going to play a lot. Matisse Thybulle at the five is really interesting. That could
it's a big
be
change.
A good call. Yeah. No, that could. I think that could be a good call, especially, you know, the Heat went small, like really small, quite a bit in that first round series. Like, and I wonder if they'll go to that again where they don't necessarily play Deadman in his normal minutes. Mm-hmm. And when Bam goes to the bench, we'll see what happens. And, you know, Harden could draw two fouls in the first 6 minutes against Bam. And then, okay, all of a sudden, like, all bets are off. That's totally on the table. It's the crazy things can happen. So, I'm interested to see if Harden, he doesn't need to have like a 40-17 game for them to win. But I'm curious if he has one of those left in him, like in his career.
I mean, it's weird, but it's almost been a while since he's been in a position to cook like he is in these games without Embiid, where, you know, the Nets had such a weird roster with Durant and Irving, whether they were playing or not. And it's been a long, and now with Embiid, obviously they're a good partnership. The pick and roll is great, but, you know, playing with Embiid calls for certain kind of, you know, give ups or whatever that Harden has to do. The word is escaping me, but certain just kind of you know.
How hot is it in Phoenix?
He has to make certain concessions. There we go, playing with Embiid. Whereas I think right now he can really, they can really put three shooters and a screener around him, or four shooters around him, and kind of give him space that he has not had in a long time. And I know he's not been blown by people, but I think if you give him enough space, you still want to put Tyler Herro or Max Strus on an island with James Harden. Maybe Strus, because he locked up Jason Tatum, but
I'm gonna call concessions give ups from now on. That's like we just should be simplifying the English language.
Thank you
for that.
I'm not from this country, so
don't make excuses. Stop that. George Niang could play some five. Tobias could play some five. I do wonder though if Doc Rivers is that type of coach, honestly, especially in a game one. Like we'll find out.
Yeah, we're gonna lean on our centers. Yeah, he's like, we got four, and it's like,
Paul,
do you?
Reed, Bassey. He, I'm sorry, you're just stop. Like, you don't need to do that. But we'll see. It should be interesting. We're gonna have a lot to say about this series.
Can I throw something? Sure. I think the Heat are gonna lose this game one. This was like
entirely
a classic
possible.
Trap game.
It's entirely
possible. And Lowry's important.
Lowry is important. I don't think they're gonna lose this game, but they could. You know, I wouldn't be shocked if there was a split in the first two. That's definitely on the table. It's just gonna be really fascinating to see Harden. I'm really that's like one of my favorite.
It'll be fun to see.
See what he's up to. Okay, so let's move on and talk about the basketball that was played yesterday. I want to open. We're going to start with Celtics Bucks game one, and I want to open with this email we got from a fired up listener, Christopher.
Shout out to Chris,
all the way up in New Hampshire.
A legend for this one.
Who writes, dear Rohan.
What up, Chris?
I'm not sure. This is just for Rohan, I guess. I'm not sure if you caught Friday's podcast, but Michael finally went full Homer and picked Boston in five. I hope you'll be kind enough to remind him, A, that unlike Brooklyn's Island of Misfit Toys approach to team building, Milwaukee is a team capable of being the sum of their parts. B, that Boston won't, in fact, be able to play Brooklyn every round of the playoffs. C, there are players besides Giannis and Middleton fully capable of scoring enough to win, especially if Boston scores less than 100. And D, the quote-unquote defensive player of the year looked pretty pedestrian, injuries notwithstanding. Christopher, I just want to say thank you.
That is, I want to print that out and hang it from the rafters of my apartment building in Los Angeles. That's the best email we've ever received. He should be allowed to host an episode. Like, that is one of the most prescient emails we've ever received on this show.
I would not call it prescient. I would call it reactionary. I read this email to prove that we don't censor our listeners.
Oh, wait, he sent that after the game?
Yeah, of course.
No, that's right. Okay, fair enough.
This is an open forum for thoughts and ideas and conversation to flow. And well, I personally don't have much to say in direct response to Christopher. I think it's a good opening for us to get into our talk about game one and this series as a whole. So I'll let you start. Rowan, I gave you a few questions just to kind of kick off this discussion, but just what most surprised you about game one? Obviously, the Celtics lost by double digits at home on Sunday afternoon. Just what would most surprised you about the result of that one?
Probably that Jason Tatum airballed both a dunk and a three. I haven't seen that happen many times in an NBA game. That was pretty surprising. Our editor Matt Wong texted me yesterday and he's like, what do you want to write about for tomorrow? And I think I literally said, what was funnier, Jason Tatum's airball dunk or three?
I hope he blocked you. I really do.
I'm not saying this is troll. I'm not super surprised about game one only because I think Milwaukee in a really high regard. I also did pick Boston to win this series. So the first thing I want to throw out there is I'm kind of over the concept of game ones. Like, one thing I've realized doing this long enough now is, like, every year there's a shocking game one, and every year you talk yourself into believing something based off that game one that ends up being just not true at all. So I did my rankings today, Monday. You can read on SI.com, kind of restacking the field. Who do I think has the best title odds with the eight teams left? And I still put Boston ahead of Milwaukee. The way Boston dominated the last 4 months of the regular season is not erased by what happened in one game. Having said that, that was a tour de force defensive performance from Milwaukee. I think I alluded to this a bit last week in some of the writing I did and some things I said on the podcast. Boston did a great job defending Kevin Durant in round one, but Brooklyn still actually found ways to score. That was pretty surprising to me. How well they actually scored as a team in that series. I think Boston, after round one, only had like the fifth best net rating in the playoffs. So I also, this is all of me to say, not that I think Boston's bad, just because that I don't think they were as dominant as they were. People kind of talked about them after round one as this juggernaut that, to me, overvalued what they did in round one and not enough about what they were doing in the regular season. Anyway, what really stood out to me about yesterday's game was when Chris Middleton went down, I thought Milwaukee was going to put Pat Connaughton in the starting lineup. He's been a deadly catch-and-shoot three-point guy for them. He was fantastic during the finals last year. I think he's really improved on both ends of the floor throughout his career. I thought they would start him. They'd give Giannis space. Instead, they've gone with that super big group, Giannis, Portis, and Brook Lopez playing together. And I mean, it's no secret. If you watch the game, I'm sure you've heard the stat. Boston hit only 10 two-pointers. Milwaukee just completely shut off the paint. And that was a fantastic performance. And I'm interested to see the efficacy of that group, that three-headed, you know, monster of bigs moving forward, because I'm still not sure how well it can really work.
So I agree. First of all, I have no regrets about picking Boston in five. Like,
of course you
zero.
Don't. No, of course you don't.
I'm glad that you made that point about game ones. Game ones are really interesting.
Can I throw a stat that you maybe saw?
Is it the 2 for 10?
Yes, 2 and 10, yeah.
So that stat that you're referencing, put out by ESPN's Kevin Pelton, is that playoff teams that win on the road in game one by double digits are 2 and 10
in the last decade, I believe. Yeah, in the last decade, yeah.
And the last, this isn't the last, the last time it happened was the series that I covered like 2 weeks ago with Memphis and Minnesota. And in 2019, these two teams, it actually happened where the Celtics went into Milwaukee, spanked the Bucks, and then just got rolled in the next four games, where Kyrie Irving thought that he was Meta World Peace guarding Giannis Antetokounmpo in the fourth quarter of all those games. So there's really no, I don't think Boston has any reason to panic about anything. The Bucks defense did what the Bucks defense does. They walled off the paint, packed the middle, forced a whole bunch of threes. Boston didn't make a lot of those threes. And the thing about Boston's offense that really struggled, because Boston's defense also did a terrific job. And honestly, like,
Giannis didn't have a great shooting game.
Giannis was straight up like bad by Giannis standards. He played very well.
He was like smoking layups. And I mean, his playmaking was, you know, that was the best thing of what he was doing yesterday, obviously defensively. But yes, he was not finals Giannis.
Giannis was, and this is one of the reasons I like Boston, Giannis was 4 for 9 in the restricted area. I don't know the last time he was ever 4 for 9 in the restricted area. He was 7 for 18 in the paint. Like, that's, he made his mid-range jumpers, which was a difference maker for sure. Those are shots forever that teams are going to love. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. Like, that's just how you got to guard him. He's amazing. But Boston's defense was amazing in the half court, actually better than Milwaukee's. And I thought they executed their game plan nearly to perfection. They doubled this is something Ime Udoka said after the game, and I agreed watching it live. They doubled Giannis probably too quick off of
there
one
was
pass away shooters.
There was one double they sent to Giannis. Granted, it was Pritchard that was guarding him briefly on a switch. It was. I was watching the game with a friend. I was like, that's the fastest double team I've ever seen. truly, the yes.
Well, no, I mean, the center of their defensive game plan, this is something I wrote about for tomorrow, because I wrote about Drew Holiday's isolation
Holiday
offense.
Holiday was fantastic, by the way, defensively.
Yes, defensively.
Dare I say,
he was,
dare I
he
say
was good.
The best he's defensive a, guard on the floor yesterday.
He's, okay. He was good. He was very good. The point that I made was that Giannis is everything to their offense. To Boston's defense. He's mm-hmm. like their son. He everywhere he goes, they're worried about him. They normally switch everything. They even did it with KD. Not everything, but almost every ball screen, they're switching on and off with KD so that they always have a man glued to him. It wasn't like that with Giannis. Like, Al Horford was asked mm-hmm. to fight through screens and stick with Giannis. They did not want to switch.
Can I just say a word of support for Al Horford real quick?
Sure.
I think he's
always
still
welcome.
I think he's still one of the most underrated big men in the NBA. And I genuinely thought the Heat should have gone after him for years. He's, to me, like, they talk about like Smart and Rob Williams and the key to Boston switching defense. It also doesn't work without Horford, who every time is switched onto a guard, I'm confident Horford's going to win the matchup. There's so many guys I'm confident he's going to win the matchup. Yesterday, he was 3 of 8 from three. You really can't ask him to do much better than that. I mean, he had wide open looks. I get it. But I mean, at the end of the day, I just think he's still an underrated big. And what I loved about yesterday's game was watching guys like him and Brook Lopez really affect the game. But yeah, man, Horford, I just think we talk so much about Tatum's one-on-one defense and Smart winning defensive player of the year and Rob Williams roaming and covering non-shooters. But Horford, man, it doesn't work without him either. He's so good.
Horford's very good. In situations where they would normally switch ball screens, the Bucks would have Giannis set the screen on Holiday instead of Lopez, because the Celtics put Tatum on Lopez so they can switch those actions. But with Horford, they would drop. And on the first, I think it was one of the, maybe the first play of the game or second play of the game, Giannis comes up, sets a high ball screen for Holiday, and he just dribbles into a pull-up wide open three, drills mm-hmm. it. Those are going to be avenues for Milwaukee if the Boston is committed to not switching a ton with Giannis in situations like that. But like at the end of the day, the number one reason Boston should feel confident going forward is the turnover game was outrageous. Like the Boston Celtics had one of the best offenses in the NBA. The last few months of the season, in large part because their passing, their ball movement, their man movement, the cutting. It was also crisp, and they took care of the ball also. Some of the sloppiest basketball that the Celtics have played offensively in months in that game. And some of that is for sure Milwaukee's defense and their pressure. And, I mean, credit to them for having the energy to pick up
everyone full court. I shouted at Holiday. I mean, him picking up Smart full court start of the game, I thought set the tone. And like I mentioned, playing those really big lineups, I think, played a role. I do think there's an element of turnovers that's definitely not sustainable for what Milwaukee did. I mean, we can go through the list of things we think is going to change from game one to game two, and you could make the argument in any team's favor. But you're right. I do think that it's fair to think Boston is more capable of taking better care of the ball than they did in game one. At the same time, I think Milwaukee's going to give them problems. I also just want to say, watching Milwaukee, even though they have an old school defense, is so refreshing, because it just has become like all the good teams want to switch. It's like, how well are you going to hold up on switches? Who is going to get targeted? And Milwaukee's like, yeah, we're playing a 7-foot guy with really long arms, and that's not even our best defensive player. We also have Giannis Antetokounmpo, aptly nicknamed the Greek Freak. And yeah, they're just playing drop and they're just walling off the paint. And it's actually really refreshing to watch a team play defense that way.
Refreshing is one word for it. Absolutely. It was a great defensive performance, no doubt. Going back and watching the game.
Brooke was insane, man.
He was very good. The Celtics also had quite a bit of success on high pick and rolls with Jason Tatum and Rob Williams, drawing Brooke Lopez out of the paint, or when he didn't even want to come out of the paint, Tatum made him pay with the pull-up threes. That was a really good look for them that they didn't go to. I think, like, if you watch, obviously they watch the film as a team, they're going to probably attack that matchup a lot, I would assume, going forward. And Jaylen Brown was just a complete shell of himself in that game. I do not expect him to play that bad, be it the turnovers, be it airballing a floater, be it he just did not look engaged offensively and was down on himself defensively trying to hang with Bobby Portis, who hit some ridiculous contested shots that you just got to live with. But like, kudos to the Bucks for kind of understanding what the assignment was. That's like the best way I could describe that victory for them. They
you
know
could,
exactly
you
what
could
they
tell
are.
That team has won a championship together before. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like they did not have Middleton, no panic, knew exactly what they had to do, knew the intensity level that they needed to come into this game with. So absolute kudos to them. Incredible performance. You know, shooting 18 for 50 from behind the 3-point line is just like not going to get it done. And I really think that, like, there are different things Boston can do to Brooke Lopez to really take advantage of that deep drop. And, you know, Tatum forced a bunch of shots in the paint that he normally would kick, find shooters, kick, drive, kick. Grant Williams had one pump fake and go, and he tried to shoot a floater over Brooke Lopez, and it was just like swallowed whole when Daniel Tice was wide open 15 feet from the basket on the baseline. Like, there's all these different things that they can adjust with. So I don't think the Celtics should be that concerned. It's going to be a really fun series, though, and I kind of look forward to Game 2 Tuesday. It's a big one.
Yeah. I definitely think you should be concerned because the emailers are bringing the heat.
Let's go.
Yeah, and
I love it.
I'm glad everyone just got to listen to you rationalize that loss in real time, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm just,
but
that's what I do. I respect
our
listeners.
I'm feeling great
to give them the knowledge. That's what I'm trying to do here.
I'm feeling great about my Bucks, Mike. That's all I got to say. I really enjoyed that game. That was
Did you pick the Celtics?
Yeah. Here's why I picked the Celtics. Because it will make it funnier when they eventually lose. I could be like, hey, I expected you guys to win. What happened here? You know, this team was supposed to be historically great. And here we are.
Historically great? I really don't know what universe you live in sometimes. Or why that would be funny. But yeah, sure.
At what point did you start to get nervous yesterday?
About the game?
Yeah.
I thought they were going to lose the game when I saw Brad Stevens walk out of his suite. That was probably the point where I was like, oh, I guess this is not competitive anymore. Down double digit, like, right around then, late in the fourth quarter, like, I forget.
I mean, they had the crazy stretch. Was it late in the third where Giannis picked up that one of the, maybe the,
bad
lowest
foul.
IQ. One of the worst bad fouls foul. I've seen him take in the years of watching him. That was the worst foul he's taken since he hip checked Mike Dunleavy. That was.
I don't even know. I honestly don't. No, I wonder if anyone asked him about it after the game.
Was he like trying to come out of the game? It was such a weird foul. And after that, you know, I think he checks out and it's like a 6-point game and there's a little over 3 minutes to go in the third quarter, and I thought that was when Boston needed to make the run. And I tweeted, you know, if Boston wins this stretch, I think they win the game, like, you know, tied up at least. And they didn't even cut into the lead. And then the Celtics started the fourth quarter with an awful lineup, and that was kind of a rare I thought, misstep from Udoka. I agree, but I also think there's plenty of things the Bucks can clean up as well. You mentioned Giannis going 4 of 9 in the restricted area. I also thought he missed some layups and shots he normally makes. Drew Holiday did not have a great shooting game. It's not like the Bucks caught fire from 3 or anything. And again, I think part of that, again, is a credit to Boston's defense, but I think both teams are probably looking back at that game. There's things we can clean up. There's things we can do better. I do think it's obvious Boston probably will have a higher sense of urgency and a more intensity headed into game 2.
Are there any other, what did you think of the matchups individually? Like, I already talked about how the Celtics started with Tatum on Lopez. They really mixed up the really interesting coverages on Drew Holiday, and I honed in on that just because I wrote about it, so I was going back and really focusing on that. But putting Grant Williams on Drew Holiday and then being able to switch pick and rolls, because Grant Williams is suddenly one of the most valuable players on the team.
Seriously.
So I just thought that was really, really fascinating wrinkle going forward. And honestly, what may be the best lineup Boston has in this series, I don't want to say it doesn't have Horford in it, but Tatum, Horford and Rob are kind of interchangeable if Horford's threes are falling. But the lineup that I think Ime should give a look at going forward is Rob, Tatum, Jaylen, Peyton Pritchard, and Grant Williams. I think you need to try to combine spacing as much as possible. They're going to give you the threes. That's what this defense does. They're going to give you wide open threes.
Right.
Peyton Pritchard had wide open threes.
There's going to be a game in this series where the Celtics shots are falling and it could genuinely get ugly. I loved how you mentioned how the Celtics put Tatum on Lopez. I loved that right from the start of this game, there was no easing into it. There was no regular season BS. It was no. It's time.
Very physical.
Very physical. We're going with our matchups. I wonder if the Celtics can find ways to attack Portis more. It's crazy, the Bobby Portis roller coaster, but through the first 2 games of last year's NBA Finals, people were like, this guy's unplayable. The Suns are going after him in every switch.
He was out of the rotation against the Nets.
Yeah.
Straight up. He was out of the rotation.
And, again, obviously Milwaukee's not a team that's switching everything, but is there a way that they can target Portis? I'm interested to see what happens with Derek White. I mean, he hit a couple threes yesterday, but I thought he had some tough moments, and he was a little bit up and down in that Nets series as well. Do you lean on Pritchard more, who, I'm with you, he had wide open threes, and I'm at the point I'd rather him taking those shots than Derek.
He's a better shooter. He's a much better shooter.
And he's gonna have a game where they fall. And I think playing them together is probably not the move. So I like that lineup you're suggesting. I'm interested to see if Milwaukee at any point counters by going really small with Giannis at center. Can they get away with, for a brief stretch, playing Connaughton and Grayson Allen together on the floor with Drew and trying to put a ton of catch and shoot guys around Giannis?
I just don't think that's not.
And they only even come close to doing it when I think they're really, really backed into a corner. It wasn't until late in that Nets series when they're last year, where they were really doing kind of crazy stuff, and then back again in the conference finals and finals, they went back to doing who they are. But I think if a team is capable of pushing to them to such lengths, I think that team is Boston.
I think that Bud will go down with Brook Lopez.
Yeah.
Especially with the banner has been raised.
Yeah.
If you thought he was,
maybe now he has the freedom to really get weird. Who knows? We'll see.
Maybe. Any other thoughts on game 1 or going forward in the series, or are you ready to move on to Grizzlies Warriors?
No, just want to once again, if anyone for some reason is tuning into the podcast now and missed what I said earlier, Jason Tatum.
That's not how podcasts work.
Jason Tatum did airball a dunk and a three. So
that's not even close to what happened. Okay, let's move on to Grizzlies Warriors. This game was incredible.
That was a playoff
so
game.
So much fun.
Yeah.
The Warriors pulled it out very late. like last possession, Ja Morant missed layup type of ending to close off the victory. Klay Thompson, the multiple
real up
time
and down,
champion,
yeah.
was very excited after that one. You love to see it.
Well, he almost messed it up for him. I'd be excited too.
I want to start just like you know, this is kind of superfluous to the game now that it's over. But like, should Draymond Green have been ejected? Like, what? I just want to get this out of the way because it was like, you know, Draymond after the game recorded his own podcast.
Oh my God,
he refused to come on Open Floor. The invitation was sent. And dismissed. He went on his own pod. He explained, for those who don't know, Draymond Green was ejected in the second quarter of this game after he smacked Brandon Clark in the face and then
pulled him down
by the
jersey
and pulled him down.
But then helped him up by the jerseys too. Like,
so afterwards, Draymond, I guess.
He said it was a reputation call. He said yes. He got ejected because of his reputation.
Yes.
Here's the thing. Do I think he should have been ejected? I don't like players getting ejected from playoff games. It just messes with the results and compromises the integrity of the game too much. I understand the NBA is in a difficult position because you want to care about player safety and you want to dissuade people from taking hard fouls. Then give them a massive fine or make it 3 free throws. I don't know. But do something besides ejecting players. As far as Draymond's reputation goes, I mean, so we did this during the Nuggets series. I love Draymond. He's one of my favorite players in the NBA. He could get 2 technicals within the first quarter of every single game he's ever played in. Like, the level of verbal abuse he gets away with referees is unlike any other player I've seen in my life. That includes, you know, you name a superstar, they're not going at refs the way Draymond is, you know, glaring at them, staring at them, clapping at them, yelling at them after nearly every play. I mean, we don't have to get into it, but so Draymond, it's a double-edged sword, but refs recognize how intense he is, and so that means he gets away with way more verbal abuse. But when something like that happens and you have a history of flagrants or kicking people or whatever it was he was doing during that 2016 run, yeah, it's going to happen. And he can say it's a reputation thing, but he has to be accountable to that reputation. He has to be accountable to that perspective. I don't think he made a dumb play, and I don't think he should have been ejected, but I'm not, like, sitting here, you know, singing songs about how bad I feel for Draymond Green either.
You don't have any songs for me?
No, I do
came
not
on
have
this
no
pod
music, no original music.
Some Draymond sympathy tunes. Yeah. It is, I agree, like, I don't want to see guys get ejected from the playoffs for hard fouls, but like, don't do that.
Yeah. Also, don't hit people in the face. Yeah.
Don't hit Brandon Clark in the face and then drag him to the ground by his jersey. It has nothing to do with basketball. That's like not a basketball play at all. Brandon Clark could have gotten hurt. Very important player for the Memphis Grizzlies. He was like their third best player in the first round. And then, you know, going on the pod and kind of talking about it and then saying that you think it's going to get rescinded and then the league is like, we're actually going to publicly say that we are not rescinding this. It was pretty funny. But
the way he left the arena was also just kind of ridiculous. Like, you're a vet,
he
man.
Lost. He, like snapped.
That was just weird. Even Iguodala was kind of like, what are you doing, man? Like, what is this? Like,
He was hyped up, a lot of adrenaline.
But that and the thing is, at the end of that's Draymond. That's what you want from him, is that level of intensity and energy and like sociopathic will to win. That's what makes him great. That's what makes him great and makes him, to me, one of the most fun players to watch. I could watch him defend pick and rolls, you know, for the rest of my life and be happy. Like, He has to also be accountable to why he has that reputation and why that perception about him exists.
There was one play, I'll just say, about Draymond that I thought was just unreal. Sniffed out he was guarding Brandon Clark. Brandon Clark had a lot of success in the first round on fake dribble handoffs, where he would keep it and spin middle, and then just the lane would be wide open for him.
He learned that from Kelly Olynyk. Watching
Kelly
Olynyk
teaches
film.
Everybody.
Yeah,
teaches everybody. I remember I asked Bam Adebayo about that when I did a story about Bam, and he was like, yeah, Kelly told me. And then I went to Kelly and I was like, Bam said he told you to, like, he taught you some stuff. Can you kind of, like, let me know what exactly is, like, in, like, the, what makes a good fake DHO, a fake DHO, whatever. And Kelly was like, I can't tell you any of that. That's, like, the secret sauce, baby. I was like, you are the biggest legend of all time. Okay, but anyway, getting back to the play, Draymond sniffed it out, was not fooled for a half second, and then blocked Brandon Clark's floater, which, just like the timing to do that, the
hardest
length.
Shot the game to block, yeah.
It was very impressive. Okay, so one of the really interesting things about, this will lead us into the rest of the game, talking about it, but one of the interesting things, and Jeff Van Gundy pointed this out on the broadcast, Draymond not being available in the second half allowed Jordan Poole to start. And Jordan Poole finished the second half with 17 points. He had three threes. He was 7 for 11 from the floor. Six assists. Best player on the floor, maybe. You could make the case for sure. And one of the most interesting things that I'm finding about this series, and honestly, this postseason, is, can we have a quick little conversation about Ja Morant's defense?
Yeah, please.
It is not good. It is bad. And in the first round, I don't think I'll ever forget Patrick Beverley coming to the podium after the meltdown in game three by the Timberwolves. And he basically said, like, that game, for those who don't remember, that game began with Patrick Beverley just going at Ja Morant one-on-one in space and scoring over and over again at the rim, drawing fouls, giving him the too small. And after the game, Patrick Beverley was like, I had a conversation with my trainer after game two, and we like that matchup. Morant, just one of the great, low-key great quotes.
Morant never looks skinnier than when someone's posting him up. And then you're like, wait a second, what happened here? Clay was posting him up at one point in the game, and I was like, ah, yeah. Like, that's why it's so thrilling when Ja does all the dunks and stuff. It's because he's very tiny.
So, I think Ja is an amazing player, obviously. I feel like, to keep it real, I'm asking you this question in all honesty. Why is it that we kill Trae Young for his defense, but we don't talk about Ja Morant's defense? Can you answer that question for me?
I think it's because Ja has been able to lead his team. Like, the Hawks...
Wait. What? Are they in the conference finals?
No, the Hawks... Mike, you know, you're going to make me criticize the Hawks conference finals run last year, which I don't want to do. But... last year, the Hawks, frankly, played two teams that were just not in a position to take advantage of how bad his defense is. You could even argue they played three teams, because even Milwaukee is, like, so reluctant to match up Hunt.
Dude. Okay, but...
I just think the Grizzlies were that good this season. That's why. That's why. I mean, it wasn't an issue this season. They were able to finish second seed.
Do you know what their defensive rating is with Ja Morant on the court versus Ja Morant off the court this season?
Let's hear it.
So Ja Morant on the court this season, defensive rating was 111.2.
Okay.
Ja Morant off the court, Memphis Grizzlies defensive rating 105.3. The 5.9 points per 100 possessions difference was the biggest disparity on the team. In the first round, that widened. Mm-hmm. And
I mean, they went on a lot of big runs with him off the floor in the first round.
Yes. And, like, you know, on-offs do not tell the whole story. You got to watch the game. But if you watch the Grizzlies play, if you watch Ja Morant's defense, even in game one yesterday, he's not boxing out. He's gambling for steals, his man back cuts, layup. And you watch his teammates, they're like, they're yelling at him.
So Dylan Brooks is a great communicator. And I actually, like, he yells at guys, but you know he's right.
100%. And I'm just, you know, again, I think that Ja is incredible. They wouldn't be where they are with them. I'm not one of those people who's like, oh, they went 20-2 or whatever when Ja was at. Like, I don't care about any of that. He's the reason that they won game five. He was incredible offensively down the stretch. But like,
so you're just using this stat to further your Trae Young agenda.
No, no, no. This has nothing to do with it. No, I'm trying to keep it 100% real. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering why we're holding one player to a standard and another player to a different standard. Because Ja Morant's defense is just as bad as Trae Young's. And anyone watching these two teams play can see that. And if you watch game one, Golden State's strategy, they started GP2 just so GP2 could set ball screens for Steph Curry over and over and over again and bring Ja into that action. Over and over and over again, they had 4-on-3s with GP2 coming up at about the free throw line, kicking out to wide open three-point shooters, Clay in one corner, Andrew Wiggins in the other. Like, it was a fundamental part of their strategy, which is something that you don't see out of the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah,
that's really
also
not
another
how they
team
play.
That's not a big, yeah.
Steve Kerr has said multiple times, I don't manipulate the game that way. That's not how you do it. They were manipulating that matchup. They were making him work defensively. They're going to do that this entire series. Mm-hmm. If the Grizzlies win, best believe the winner of the next series is going to do the exact same thing. And that's what the playoffs do. Like, teams saw what Patrick Beverly
did. You're only as good as your worst weakness in the playoffs, and it's how can you compensate for it.
So, I don't. This isn't like my number one takeaway from the game, but I'm just like, I think it's a fun, not fun. It's just like an interesting thing that I think we should be paying more attention to.
You wrote the big stories on Trae Young and Ja Morant, so I mean this kind of feels like maybe. You know, I should be asking you this question. I'm just going off what I read in Sports Illustrated, bro.
I will say I have watched thousands of minutes of both of these players play basketball, and I don't see a big difference, and I do see a wide gap between how we talk about them, and I just think it's interesting. That's all.
I mean, if I had to say why, which I think is a separate conversation than obviously what happened to the game, I just think that the Grizzlies so far have been able to kind of make up for it in a way that the Hawks haven't, and what Morant doesn't have that Young has, that Trae just kind of has the baggage of his first couple years in the league when people attach these expectations to him. Oh, he's going to be this Steph-like figure, and then the Hawks were just kind of so bad and not fun to watch. The Grizzlies never had that period. I think if they had that period and weren't always kind of this exciting upstart, it would be a lot different. But the ascension with Ja, I think, happened more quickly, which is why that conversation didn't happen. I mean, I think Trae followed a similar... it's not dissimilar to what happened to Devin Booker, right? I mean, he got killed for his defense, empty stats guy, et cetera. And that's because they had all those years where they were in the lottery. So if we really want to get down to like why that conversation happened, I think Ja has come into the spotlight with less baggage than other guys have, just because the rise kind of happened more quickly. Our expectations for the Grizzlies are different. How he consumed his career is different, the kind of the excitement level. So I think those are the factors why, but it's a good point ultimately that you're making, which is that his defense is an issue. And like every other team in the playoffs that has, you know, either the guy that gets targeted or whatever it is, they have to figure out a way to overcome it.
Yeah. And I also think that when people think of Ja, they think about, or they see the block that he had against the Lakers. And it's like, that was a defensive play, an incredible defensive play. Mm-hmm. He had the steal in the corner at the end of game one yesterday, where it's like, oh, incredible instincts, incredible defense. And he has the ability to use his athleticism in passing lanes, getting steals, creating havoc, getting in transition, lob finish. Like, he can do all that stuff. And I think people remember those moments where, like, Trae, you know,
his size affects the perception, certainly. I think that's a really good point.
So, talking about this game one just holistically, did the Grizzlies like blow this whole series?
I don't think so. I know people are saying that, and I get it. But like I said, I'm just tired of overreacting to game ones. If they lose this series, it could be because Golden State is just better and has more championship experience. And, you know, to me, what was crazy about game one, Golden State had four more rebounds. They matched Memphis in offensive rebounds. That's without Draymond. That's with Kevon Looney playing 19 minutes. I was yelling at my TV, and I was so upset when Klay missed that second free throw. That to me is a sign of a young team. How are you not prepared to get the rebound in that situation? That's your game on the line. Gary Payton comes in from behind the three-point line and gets the, you know, it should have been Warriors ball. The Grizzlies catch a huge break with the jump ball, but that should have been Memphis rebound, timeout, and, you know, instead, the ball goes out of bounds. There's a jump ball. You cost yourself valuable time. It's lame to talk about rebounding, but that was an incredible rebounding effort from Golden State that finished the game with Klay Thompson playing center, and they're still getting offensive rebounds. And that speaks to the pretzels that Steph turned their defense into, the switching that Memphis had to do to compensate for Ja, et cetera. But, like, the Warriors winning that rebounding battle? I mean, that was crazy, man.
It's not lame to talk about rebounding. Incredibly important. The reason why Memphis is here is their offensive rebounding in the first round. So 100%, that was a huge factor in the game. That's something that Memphis, like, their ability to just out-hustle, out-whatever their opponent, have more energy on the glass, have like second and third efforts for loose balls, like all that adds up. And that's why Memphis is Memphis and why they are where they are. If they're losing that marginally, then they pretty much have no chance. Like, because the Golden State Warriors will out execute they obviously have better shooting. Like, you have to win the possession game.
What do you think happened to Bane yesterday? Was he just off? I was kind of shocked at the game he had and was like, when's he checking back into this game? He came back in late for Melton.
So, well, Melton was playing really well.
He was.
So that might have been a little bit of a factor. But, yeah, off night for Bane. I think one of the most fascinating – I'm writing a story about Bane right now. Mm-hmm. One of the most fascinating things about him is and the way that Minnesota – defended him versus how Golden State did yesterday. Like, Minnesota's strategy was essentially, we're taking away Ja's drives. Every time Ja has the ball on the perimeter, there's going to be three bodies in front of him. And we're going to need, in this case, probably it's going to be D'Angelo Russell, unfortunately for Minnesota, to worry about Desmond Bane. And, you know, there were many, many times where D'Angelo Russell was not up to the task there, and Desmond Bane shook free and in games 3 and 4 took 25 threes and was like the greatest 3-point shooter you've ever seen. Yesterday, what we saw was every touch, every catch off a screen, two guys are in Bane's face. When Bane's running a pick and roll, they're blitzing him. When Ja's driving lanes, especially in the second half, were just like something he had not seen in the first round. It was single coverage. When Bane was stretched out, 35 feet from the basket, his man, whoever it was, be it Steph or GP2, would be really not in a help position at all because they're so worried about the kick out. Ja noticed that, Ja attacked, and Ja finished. And the play where he's like, when at the very end of the first half, where he told Jonathan Kuminga, poor Jonathan Kuminga, he can't guard me multiple times. Watch Desmond, if you want to go back and watch that play, watch where Desmond Bane is, watch where the help is. That's why Ja got to where he got, why he got to the floater. So Bane had an impact. Their half-court offense is like really, really bad when he is not on the floor. And his three-point shooting is absolutely just critical to their success, for sure. And I'm not too – I wouldn't be too concerned about about his poor. I think he'll have a bounce back game. Getting that dunk that he took from GP2 was tough. Yeah. And again, I mean, those are those plays.
Incredible.
Those are again those plays saying, yeah. where I mentioned where Ja is brought up into the screen and Curry hits him on the slip and it's a 4-on-3. And so when we look at Bane getting dunked on, that's because of Ja's defense. Yeah. So yeah, I think Bane will be fine. Mm-hmm. I don't think it would be that big of a deal if they ended up winning game.
Can I hit you with a crazy Warriors stat that kind of blew me away?
Sure.
All right, so I don't know if the new death lineup played yesterday. I don't believe they did.
Can you tell me what the new death lineup is exactly?
It's Steph Curry, Jordan Poole, yes. Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Andrew Wiggins. At least that's what people were calling it after that Denver series, right? Do you know what their net rating is in their last three games that they played together? In the last... The last three times this lineup has appeared, they played 28 minutes together. Do you know what their net rating is?
I'm going to guess plus 29.4.
How about minus 20.9?
Whoa. Okay.
That lineup is starting
Kenny
to get...
Smith lied to me.
That lineup is starting to get... So, I mean, for the course of the playoffs, it's still really, really good. For the course of the playoffs, they've played five times together now, 39 minutes overall, 21.4 net rating. But after those first couple games in the Denver series, I mean, Denver was starting to have success with it late in that series. That lineup's really evened out. And that's one concern I have with Golden State, and it might not even come to pass in this series. Steve Kerr is still really trying to figure out this rotation. And... You know, at the start of that game, everyone was saying they overthought it with GP2. They need to play Poole. I don't know if that means they're going to take Wiggins out of the lineup, but they're still figuring things out, which is why I think Memphis is still very much in this.
So when I asked you what the new death lineup was, mm-hmm. is because, in my opinion, GP2 should be in that lineup.
I think that's a great point.
I'm not exactly sure who that fifth guy is. Honestly, like they closed out Denver with, I want to say it was Draymond, Steph, Clay, Otto Porter in GP2.
Yeah. Hey,
yeah. So Poole wasn't even on the court.
I just want to say very early, like maybe one of the first podcasts we did before the season, I was like, I think Otto Porter's going to close some games over Andrew Wiggins. Now that was an insane take for me to have at the time. And then
what did you base that on? I'm just curious.
I just thought I didn't think Wiggins was going to have the shooting season he had this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of really based it on like, oh, maybe Porter's going to offer them some more space as a guy who stands in the corner than Wiggins. But lo and behold, it happened in a playoff game. So I felt kind of vindicated.
It was big time.
Yeah.
But GP2 is not a 6'3 person.
Yeah.
He's his own position and does so many things for them. But I think fundamentally, like, so just talking about Poole for a second, because obviously he had a tremendous game, finished with...
He also did get dusted by Ja a couple times on the perimeter.
As
does
one
many,
is...
Many defenders
do, yeah. Yes. But I posed this question to you in our outline. Jordan Poole is a top blank underline player right now. We're obviously months away. I wish it was years away from doing the top 100.
Yeah. Oh, God. I mean, I might be on vacation those 2 months. so we got that unlimited. Dude, I mean, think about it. I asked you before the start of the playoffs, do we want Poole or Hero? And I think we kind of were like, I think I ended up saying Poole. It's not close now. Like, that would be a joke if you asked somebody that. I mean, is he a top? I'm going to
say... let me say a number
I
think is reasonable.
Okay, because I have a number that I think is unreasonable. So I don't know
I bet you do, yeah. I was going to say top 30.
I was going to say top 50. You think he's a top 30 guy right now?
No,
I mean, he's insane. He's like,
I'm just a guy asking questions.
So, I mean, as we've seen with Kevin Durant, once you leave Steph Curry, things aren't so sweet anymore.
I'm saying, like, this dude is not old.
No, he can, in all seriousness, they found another Clay at the worst. Like, not defensively, sure, but I mean, he hit that, like, pull-up deep three yesterday. Like, just, you know, Memphis is going on a run. He just walks it up, pull-up deep three from the right wing.
He had 6 points in, like, 13 seconds.
Yeah, he's terrifying. He's a problem. They have to figure out how it's going to work because they are running into an issue where too many of their good players are, like, guards. Like, Steph, you mentioned Steph, Clay, Poole, and GP2. That's going to be tough against certain teams, but I don't want to start thinking about the top 100 because it's going to drive me literally crazy. Like, I'm not going to show up to the Suns game tonight. And I'm going to be like, I was trying to figure out where to rank Jordan Poole.
Poole's true shooting in the playoffs right now in 199 minutes is 72.1%.
I'm willing to say he's a top 40 guy. I'm willing to say he's a top 40 guy.
He's 22 years old. Like, for projecting forward for what he can do next season off of the playoff run that he's on right now, I know there were some clunkers in the Nuggets series, but
he also is playing with two of, I mean, gravity doesn't begin to explain what Steph and Clay have.
Correct, absolutely. And you see it when they're interacting, like, directly. When he'll set like a ghost screen and the defense will just like melt into a puddle. But I mean, the production is the production. The shot making is the shot making.
He hit 1-3
where he got slapped in the head yesterday.
Yeah, that's correct.
Like, what? From like 30 feet, like his handle. You say he's like Clay.
He's closer to Steph.
He's like a mix.
Yeah.
He's got handle, independent shot creation. He's obviously faster than Clay ever was. I mean, his 2-point percentage is through the roof. Like he finishes. Like he's a very special.
Oh, he hit some
player.
Sick layups. Yeah, his finishing. Yeah, yeah, man.
So
that's crazy.
Jordan Poole, top 15 player is where we're going to be.
Remember when everyone was like
in the finals
when the Warrior? It was like, oh, should the Warriors trade for Damian Lillard? Like, how is that going to work? This isn't that because it's not like Poole is like a high pick and roll player, but it's pretty crazy to see them add a shooter of his caliber to what they had there. It's nuts.
Or if they drafted LaMelo instead, and then Poole, you never would have had the Poole.
Yeah,
whatever this is. Interesting sliding door stuff happening in Golden State. All right, so I'll just close by asking you this, Rohan. Does this change? Does Game One's outcome change like anything you thought? What was your prediction for this series? Was it?
I think
Warriors
I had Warriors
six?
In six, and I'm still going to go with that. I think they finished out at home, but I think we saw the good and the bad of Memphis. Right, they're fearless. They go down in the fourth quarter. They come all the way back. They still have a chance to win on the last play, but at the end of the day, I'm one of those people that's like, I need to see Steph, Clay, and Draymond lose together before I'm willing to believe it's a possibility. Like, I talk about the Heat all the time. Like, oh, they don't know who their closing five is. They don't know who their best five guys are. I think Golden State is figuring out their lineups, but it's a lot different figuring it out when you have Steph, Clay, and Dre as the starting point of what you want to do. And just the championship experience they have, they're battle tested. They can play so many different ways. I mean, think about just how different Minnesota or Memphis and Denver are. I do think it's time to stop this, like, Xavier Tillman starting at center. Like, just play Brandon Clark. Like, what are we doing here? Stop being cute with it.
It's a question that I think Taylor Jenkins could make that adjustment at some point. My understanding is just that you can't play Brandon Clark too many minutes because one, foul trouble. Two, he is just all energy. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he is the only big. He's only 6'8".
Yeah,
sometimes he's the only big on the floor. And he's like tipping out misses, over jumping over four guys. Every finish that he has is usually like through contact. He just takes, it's a beating.
And I don't disagree. I'm also a proponent of play your best five players to start the game. So, you know, I mean, I what you're saying are real concerns.
So let me just ask you. So is Eric Spoelstra a moron for bringing Tyler Hero off the bench then?
No.
So Tyler Hero is not one of the five best players on the Miami Heat? Is that what you're saying here on this podcast today?
You know that I've been a Hero skeptic for a long time.
I don't know why.
I don't think that they could get away with his defense in starting lineups.
Okay.
Just, that's it. That's that.
We didn't talk about Trip at all.
Yo.
I just want to quickly say that one of the reasons why I think the Grizzlies, like, that was a real, that's what particularly hurts
when he goes nuclear from three. Yeah.
It was his best game of the season. Like,
yeah,
not even close. After watching him up close in the first round, some of the baskets that he was making, some of the moves he was making, I was like, where did this, forget about the 3-point, like the shots that were falling. His aggression on Wiggins, on Clay, that stuff just like wasn't there at all in the first round period. And he stayed out of foul trouble, which is the number one mm-hmm. problem right now with his game. So, you know, if he's able to replicate that against these small lineups, then shout out to him. Very fun player to watch. You can kind of see him. The wheels are kind of churning in his head. You can kind of see it.
33 points in 31 minutes.
Incredible game. Incredible game.
I mean, they also, I'm looking at the box score right now, and it's like Brooks only played 30 minutes because of foul trouble, which, I mean, is going to happen the way he was hounding Steph, but he's 2 of 8 from three. Bane is 1 of 5. I think Jackson's almost definitely not going to have a game that good again. I think you're banking on Bane and Brooks to do more than 17 points on 3 of 13 shooting from three. So, you know, and you could go do this with every playoff game, go up and down the box score, say this won't happen again, this will, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, losing, I mean, Trip was sensational, man. I think I just sent an all caps text at one point to the group chat that was just Trip. He was so good. He was so good.
I saw that text and I flipped my phone over. I was like, I can't, I'm not. Rohan's about to go on one. This could spill into some Celtic slander. I'm not engaging.
I thought I was very respectful of you and the space you needed yesterday.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, Rohan. I think that's going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much.
Can I send one last shout out?
Sure.
You forwarded me a very nice email that we didn't have time to get to on the show. But shout out to Jackson, I believe. Jackson and his wife who listened to the show. And they said they loved the enthusiasm hat. I just want you to know, it's real. I love it. I love doing the show. I love talking hoops with Mike. Like, we're having a good time. I mean, this is it. We've been waiting for the playoffs. Like, there are only good basketball games left for us to watch. Like, every basketball game that's going to happen from now on is between two good teams. And they're going to be good. And that's really exciting.
Amen, brother. So thank you to you. Thank you to our listeners, all of you. Please keep your emails coming. openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Thank you for excusing my head cold. It is hopefully almost out of the system. Feeling a little better every day. But thanks, guys. Everybody, please stay safe. Everybody, please continue to enjoy the NBA playoffs. Hey.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Hyland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Hyland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at Hyland.com.